Hello, welcome to Strange Love Movies. My name is Olivia Martinez, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Oscar and Emily Martinez. And Oscar season is among us. This Sunday,
it's always Oscar season in my house.
That's true. Oscar Martinez here.
Unless it's Emmy season.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. Why have I never thought about that?
Yeah,
before?
If you had been a boy, we would have named you Tony.
That's not true.
Oh my gosh. Or Golden Globe. Gigi. That would be so funny. Okay, but what we're going to be doing today is we don't have time, you don't have time, none of us have time to go over all of the nominees and our predictions, but we're going to be talking about the Best Picture films and the nominees because there are 10 nominations, and we have collectively seen all of them. I have not seen one of these films. They have not seen two of them. We'll make it work, though. Let's start with American Fiction, which we actually talked about recently. Saw it in the theater. What did y'all think?
I really liked this. I thought it was very relatable, and it was a movie that a lot of people would like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it explored the family dynamic very well, and it was very sweet and had a sensibility to it that you don't see too often these days. And it was kind of old-fashioned, as you'll hear in our podcast dedicated to it.
Yes, and it was really witty, and it was written and directed by Cord Jefferson, who's nominated for a lot of other Oscars, which is exciting because he's a William & Mary alum, and this is his first movie. What a success story. Next, we have Anatomy of a Fall, which is sadly the one I have not seen yet. Hopefully, I'll be able to see it before Sunday. I don't know. We'll see. What do you guys think of Anatomy of a Fall?
I really liked it. I mean, I think back on it a lot, actually. It had some scenes that are, it's such a cliche, but are really haunting. Mm. And it left you with some questions in your mind and just incredible acting performances, and really it was very interesting.
I know. The only thing we'd heard about it going into it was that it was a courtroom drama, and you're watching it like, how is this going to be a courtroom drama? Because they start in the Swiss Alps or someplace, and it's beautifully shot.
Yeah.
And
very French well Alps, done. I guess.
French Alps, yes.
French movie.
Yes, exactly. And But the acting was fantastic, and it was like another old-school drama where, again, no car chases, no guns, no explosions. It was just all this tension between this couple and the family, and it was really, it's definitely worth seeing.
And I have to say that I think of all the acting performances of the year, that dog in this.
Oh, yes. There's a dog.
Oh, if he was competing with everybody else, nobody else would have a chance.
Yeah, they used to nominate pets. Did you know that?
Yes. And I think that kind of thing would actually make people want to watch the Oscars more if they had a nomination for the animals.
Yes, Bring it back for sure. But one last thing, too, if you're a big fan of the rapper known as 50 Cent, right?
Yes.
50 Cent. It's spelled 50 Cent, but it's pronounced 50.
50.
You'll really enjoy this film, I think.
Yes, I think so too. It has
a pretty
memorable scene involving his music.
I really want to see it. It's just hard because it's on the longer side and I just haven't had a chance, but hopefully soon. Next, okay, now this is embarrassing that we, a movie podcast, have not covered this film, but we have Barbie. We've seen this separately. I saw it in the Philippines the day it was released. Y'all saw it for your anniversary, right?
I think so.
Because it was the only movie playing, basically.
In August, yeah.
It was late.
Yeah. Yes. It was like 2.5 months late, and they were
still
showing
it. Long
it.
Ago, yeah.
And
yeah.
There were still people showing up with moms and daughters and
dressed
grandmas.
Dressed in pink
whatever,
and everything.
Everybody wearing pink. They were still doing it. It was a phenomenon, for sure.
It's pretty crazy. But this film, I think we're all about the same on it. 2.5, 3 stars, maybe.
Yeah.
3 stars for the effort.
I know. It was a good movie.
Yes.
It just was not a great movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm really irritated that Margot Robbie wasn't nominated for an Oscar because I think she was by far the best part of it.
Was.
She did a really good job. She was Barbie. And I think it was a pretty movie and it was clever and witty, but it really could have been a lot better. I mean, it didn't have much of a story and it was, what story it had was a little bit too, took itself a little too seriously. So it was all right. It was entertaining. It's probably worth seeing just to see the most popular movie of the year.
I don't think we need
year,
to tell people. It's. I think everyone listening to this has seen Barbie.
Three things for me. The first 20, possibly 30 minutes are fantastic.
So good.
It
so beautiful,
so much
too.
Entertainment. It's great. But then
when they go to the real world,
yeah, it was bad. It was like you can, what are we celebrating here? I didn't understand part of it, probably because I'm a man. I don't know, but but I did love the first 30 minutes, you know, pretty people doing fun things. It was just this fantasy world, and that's what movies are.
And any of us who grew up playing with Barbies, you know, we can kind of relate to some definitely. Of the dream house stuff. That was fun.
But that's one thing. But the second thing was, Kate McKinnon, is that her name?
Yes.
Unfunny.
The idea, her character's idea was funny. The idea of that was funny.
The Colonel from Monty Python, actually he said, not funny. He would walk through these skits and really, he'd be the arbiter.
Trying too hard.
And then Will Ferrell, oh my gosh, I'm an equal opportunity. He was not funny at all.
You didn't think?
No.
I thought he was funny.
I thought he was kind of funny.
He wasn't. He was like older and like really forcing it.
No, see, everyone hated that part, so you're not alone.
Yeah.
But I, for some reason, kind of liked that part, probably because it reminded me the most of the Lego Movie, which is one of my favorite movies ever. And I think the Lego Movie existing made it really hard for Barbie to be as good, because just like when you make a movie about a toy, you know, like Lego Movie is what you want to do, and they just couldn't get there with the funniness.
And I think that part of that was due to the fact that they were fighting this. I'm sure there's some opposition in Hollywood to having a movie about Barbie, because people have very strong emotions one way or the other about Barbie. So they included things like Ruth Handler, the older lady who
we know about because I did a project on her in seventh grade, and we had to read this terrible biography, and my mom had to read it too.
She was the creator of Barbie, and very impressive woman, but it's sort of like that character did not need to be in this movie, and it just kind of bogged it down. And I think that the director and writers had to, I don't know, they had to navigate some choppy waters, and that led to some pretty kind of unnecessary parts to this movie.
Yeah, and did I get to three things, or should I add a fourth thing on there? Was one extra, that extra dance scene was, I mean, Ryan Gosling was great as Ken, but
I'm just Ken. I like that song.
I mean, it was fun up to a point, but then I will go back to, from a purely cinematic film buff perspective, the beginning. Oh my gosh. The overture from 2001.
That was funny.
It's been done. And first of all, who's the audience for that? Obviously, the entire world, because everybody loved it.
But it was not aimed.
And like, you're showing, you know, that is your statement.
Yeah, and I think that maybe that's the main problem with the film.
That was my problem,
is
too.
That I think it was torn between being just a mass market fun film and one that needed to be kind of artistic and important. And it really should have just gone for the fun.
And I think the problem with that was having Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach, who are two of my favorite writers in the industry, make this, because they're incredibly smart and really witty and funny. So it almost seems like it's like one for you, one for us, because like they have a joke about Stephen Malkmus, and then they have a joke about The Godfather, which is more mainstream, but just like these really, or what was it? Nietzsche Barbie, or what was?
Zack Snyder version.
Well, that was more mainstream, but like, you know, they just had these like intellectual jokes that are funny, but not for this kind of movie.
And it's sort of like they were expecting this mass market audience. Yes. But it was, I don't know. I always kind of take things like that, references like that, in a movie such as this, as being a little patronizing.
I don't agree with that.
You figure that they might be kind of laughing a little bit at the audience. Like, most people won't get this.
I really don't agree with that.
Anyway.
You can be wrong, Liv, because Mom's right.
No, I don't agree with that. I think that they're just funny, smart people who want to add. Why would they be shaking their head, rolling their eyes at people?
Here's the thing.
Who cares?
For all the joy that those Barbie dolls have brought, you didn't see any of that on the screen.
The first 20 minutes, like
The first 20 minutes, but then everything else was dismissive. Oh, you shouldn't feel that way. And that girl was so surly, the daughter.
Oh, I hated the daughter.
Didn't like her at all. Obnoxious. And the way she talked to her mother, she should have washed her mouth out with soap like the kid in Christmas Story.
Oh my gosh. America Ferrera in this. I like America Ferrera. I love Ugly Betty. But, like, why was she nominated for an Oscar? That's so embarrassing.
I know, that
it's for that one monologue.
Yeah.
And by the way, Ryan Gosling did deserve his nomination. He was really good. Ken, I thought parts with, strangely enough, I thought the parts with Ken were the kind of the funniest part.
And that's one of the problems.
And that's all right. I mean, they were making fun of men, but it was, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like mean-spirited.
My favorite
anything.
Thing was Alan, Michael Cera.
Alan, yeah, yes, he was.
They should have had more of him.
Needed more of him, definitely. Yes,
but again, the joy part.
And
of
then
it.
I liked like pregnant Barbie and all the weird Barbie. Those were funny too. Not weird Barbie.
And they were real. They were real, right? Yeah. A lot of those Barbies yeah, were like which discontinued.
Is so
but I
will funny.
Say, I mean, again, they had more of that joy.
Yes,
right.
What it felt like to play with a toy that aspirational and all this other stuff. Yeah, well, we'll move on. Let's go.
They shouldn't have gone to the real world. They should have. I don't care if it was a carbon copy of Lego Movie, but it should have been something like that. Like, what's happening to me? Like, why? Maybe like Margot Robbie becomes weird Barbie transformation or something. You know, it
or
just
even
didn't.
She becomes like a real doctor because you know there are always those Barbies yeah. that are doctors or astronauts or whatever. Really becomes that. And lives that life for a while, and then it contrasts with her having to go back in a box or something. I mean, I could see it being done in other ways where you kind of make the point that this is just fantasy and maybe it confuses some girls, but all in all, it's fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad a movie like this, well, I don't know if I'm glad it was so seen by so many people, but I mean, it is... I don't know.
Yeah, it's
I don't
better.
Know what to say.
I mean, it's definitely better than the average movie.
It is.
I mean, it's enjoyable. It's just, and that's another thing that I have to admit is that I think if it hadn't gotten so much hype, I probably would have liked it more. This is probably a classic example of I went in with higher expectations and it didn't live up to it, as opposed to going in with no expectations.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it. Actually, I saw it the day before North America could see it because being in the Philippines, they released it a day before. And I was so excited because, I mean, like I said, I
you
literally...
You saw Barbieheimer, right?
Barbenheimer, yeah, which we'll talk about the latter in a minute. But we did Barbie first and then Oppenheimer. And I'm so glad we did it that way because, again, Barbie was my most anticipated movie of the year. I was so excited. I did a project about the whole Barbie thing. Like, I love Barbie. And I was really disappointed. And I was just like, oh, no, people are going to like this.
Isn't
this
it true
good.
That the Philippines banned it because of the performance of Kate McKinnon?
No. Vietnam.
Map, right?
Vietnam banned Barbie. And it was funny because they still had Barbie advertisements when I was in Hanoi. Isn't that ridiculous?
It is odd.
Talk about good marketing. That's going to be studied. Barbenheimer will be studied in future college courses. Okay, let's move on. Sorry about this rant. So we're not going alphabetical anymore because let's talk about Oppenheimer, which we also didn't talk about on this podcast, which is embarrassing, but it's because of the same thing. I mean, it came out in the summer. I was in Asia.
Saw it separately.
I love Oppenheimer. I love this movie. I want to see it again. Oh, it's so good. What do you guys think?
I really liked it too. I mean, it was really told a really interesting story, great performances, really managed to get across the drama of the historical event, but also you felt like you kind of understood the people who were behind it. It wasn't my very favorite Christopher Nolan movie ever. I think he's made others.
I think it was my favorite.
I mean, I think it's a lot of people's favorite. It was really good, but I think some of his others I thought were. Or maybe a little bit more innovative, but
maybe, yeah.
I'll admit maybe I'm wrong because I think most people think this is his best. And either way, it was very good.
Yes.
Well, when you think about how disjointed movies are, how they're made with the scenes, you know, they're not at all. It's rare when a movie is filmed chronologically, it becomes news that they actually filmed it chronologically. Mm-hmm. They have scenes in certain places and do what have you. What an amazing. Production, right? Like to fit everything together. And it was a seamless thing where you saw. And the thing is, it's very procedural, right? I guess that's a word.
Yes.
It's a very courtroom drama. Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
I almost forgot he was in it because I forgot it was him, you know, because he's always playing a different type
Iron
of character.
Man.
He was so good in Tropic Thunder, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, but he was so, so good. And Cillian Murphy was fantastic.
Gosh, he was good.
Wasn't he great? I mean,
yes.
Because it's such a tough role because the person was not... your average person, obviously. He marched to the beat of his own drum, whatever kind of thing. And that came across really, really well. But it was very, for being so intense, it was good. It was fantastic.
And
really
the fact
it.
That a movie like this about this old, or not old, but like old timey white guy can make $954 million at the box office is just astonishing. A lot of it has to do with the whole Barbenheimer thing. But I think what happened was those Barbenheimer people who were way more excited for Barbie than Oppenheimer, including myself, which is embarrassing looking back. But those people then talked about, oh my gosh, Oppenheimer is so good. And they told people about it. So people who didn't participate in Barbenheimer saw Oppenheimer. Like, you guys saw Oppenheimer first, right?
Right, we did.
Way before.
And the thing is, it's like the story is everybody knows about the atom bomb. So it's something that everybody kind of learned about, but really nobody knows all the details. And so I can see people who normally don't go into kind of historical dramas going, and at least they know a little bit about what the story is, and then they find out so much more about how it happened and the people behind it. And so I think that's unusual for a film like this.
Well, and then also remember in the summer how the movies, they were showing films, they were showing screenings of Oppenheimer at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's insane.
It was over, I mean...
And it's a three-hour movie. I forgot to mention
It's insane. So that's that level of popularity.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
It was just definitely worth watching. And, you know, getting back to Barbie, Barbie's worth watching too. But it's like, it had some flaws. And so just, did this one too. It had some flaws.
I mean, it probably could have been 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably didn't have to have quite as much.
The last hour lagged a little bit.
Yeah, it did. And again, it was there for a reason. I mean, that was telling part of his story, but... I don't know that it was necessary.
But yeah, I really liked this movie. The score is phenomenal. The editing is insane.
Yes.
I think this will hopefully sweep at the Oscars just because I love when a movie that is so wildly seen is also so technically proficient. So this deserves like all of the Oscar love, and it's the front runner for basically everything right now, and I think it would deserve it. But yeah, the editing, I mean, this movie... It could be so boring so easily, but the fact that they're always going to different shots, and oh my gosh, we didn't even talk about when they test it.
Oh yeah.
That's so amazing. Good. I mean, it gives you goosebumps just thinking about it.
And that's probably an example of something that is done in a modern movie that couldn't have been done 20 years ago.
True. Yeah.
Also, one more thing, you mentioned that probably the weak point was the Florence Pugh character.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe... certainly she's like in a way the least important to like the main narrative, but I think that her character was important to making the point that he had these personal tragedies and personal complications in his life going on at the same time that he was developing something that affected, in a big way, affected the lives of so many strangers.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, I wasn't saying that her character was the problem. It was the writing of her character. It was just ridiculous.
And yet she's a good actress.
Yeah, no, she's amazing.
She did the best she could with it, but
that's
yeah,
what I'm saying.
Great writing,
Christopher Nolan's like known for having the dead wife problem. You know, he just doesn't know how to write women very well, but he wrote Emily Blunt pretty well. Florence Pugh was lacking, but I mean, that's okay. He's not a woman.
Right, right.
But okay, let's move on. Oppenheimer's great. We're big fans of that film. The Holdovers. We recently did a podcast about this one, too. Good movie. Very good Christmas movie. It's nice to see more Christmas representation.
Yes, good family movie. I mean, that's really definitely one you could watch with because it's familiar territory. You know, kids in a boarding school, you know, not being able to go home for whatever reason. And Paul Giamatti was really good.
He's so good in it.
He's really funny, but also in a very uptight kind of way, professorial, you know, kind of thing. He had greater ambitions, but this is where he is and this is what he does.
And again, you have people who are maybe not altogether likable, but also not mean or vicious or anything. You find yourself rooting for them.
It's a refreshing movie to watch. I kind of feel like I think a lot of people who don't really love movies probably would like The Holdovers a lot. Mm-hmm. Same with, they would like Oppenheimer probably.
I agree. Right.
Okay, next, Killers of the Flower Moon. Amazing movie. I don't know if... I think this one, actually, if people gave it a chance, who don't like movies, they would like this too, but it's 3.5 hours long. It's tough.
Just be ready. I mean, I really... Even though it would be, because it's Scorsese, it'd be best to see it on the big screen. I really, if I had to give the average person advice on when to see it, I think I'd say see it at home.
Yeah.
And halfway through, give yourself a break and just kind of walk away.
I've heard
of
a lot of people watching it over two nights.
That's so unnecessary. I think you might enjoy it more because otherwise, if you're not used to that long a film, I think you might get a little burned out by the end.
You're thinking, like all the best movies, you're wondering, how are they going to end this? And this is one of the best endings ever because of the creative way of doing it. Instead of the white type on the black screen.
Definitely my favorite ending of the year.
Much more dynamic. And, but yeah, it will benefit from streaming. And do they still make DVDs? I know Strangelove is a big fan of DVDs.
Oppenheimer isn't on streaming yet, and it sold out Blu-rays. Oppenheimer, yeah.
And with Killers of the Flower Moon, I have to say, too, it's a film that I want people to see. I think it's a story that people need to know about. Yeah.
And Martin Scorsese always has, I mean, he doesn't care about the Oscars at all. He's talked about it before. But he has the worst luck when his movies come out. Because, like, last time he had The Irishman, and that came out as Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, all those big boys. And then this year we got Oppenheimer and whatever. It's fine. It's a really good movie. It probably won't win, sadly, because it would be very deserving.
I think possibly the lead actress will win.
Yes, Lily Gladstone.
She was amazing.
How did we not mention her? But something kind of interesting, actually, that I've been hearing is, and this would be really unfortunate just because she already has an Oscar, but people are really thinking Emma Stone for Poor Things has a really good chance.
Because it's such an out there kind of...
Yeah, and the Academy just loves Emma Stone. And Lily Gladstone has been doing kind of untraditional campaigning. But Emma Stone hasn't been really campaigning at all. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think Lily Gladstone deserves it just because this role was insane. And I think more people could do the Emma Stone role than could do the Lily Gladstone role. But I don't know.
Well, speaking of Poor Things, that's one of the ones Mom and I didn't see. Do you want to tackle that in two sentences or less?
Yeah, I saw. We were trying to make this really short. I'm sorry. It'll be pretty short. But I saw Poor Things alone at a theater on a Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. It was kind of weird, but it was totally fine.
And in February, mid-February.
In mid-February, yeah.
When
I saw it so late.
Everybody else is back in school.
It's true. I was living the unemployed life, but I'm going back to school soon, I promise. But Poor Things, I was a really big fan. It's kind of a Frankenstein story, except Emma Stone is the Frankenstein. And it just looks so good. And the score is so good. I still am thinking about it in my head, which is hard to do. I mean, it was used so well. And it's really, really funny. I think I would have enjoyed the film even more if I saw it in a crowd because other people would be laughing. But I just kind of had to giggle to myself alone with the ghosts of Cinemark. And yeah, oh my gosh. I mean, I cannot emphasize how good this movie looks, how amazing the costumes are, how good the makeup it is. And yeah, it's a good time. It's a really good movie. It's directed incredibly well. And I think that it does deserve to be in the best director place.
And
instead of Barbie.
Would you give the advice that maybe a mother and daughter shouldn't see it together, or mother... like a teenager shouldn't see it with the parents.
So. Yeah, I mean, I was told, like, don't watch this with your parents. And it is pretty inappropriate, but I was not, like, outraged. And I don't think it's gratuitous. Some people do think it is, like, way too much and stuff. But, I mean, I thought that it was fine. But I don't know. Maybe that was also because I was alone, so I didn't have to cringe. Even sitting next to strangers, I guess that's kind of awkward. And one more thing. It's kind of funny that this movie came out the same year as Barbie because it kind of is just a twisted R-rated Barbie. Like, it really...
The anti-Barbie?
It really is the anti-Barbie, and it's the better Barbie because, it's still funny. But, yeah, she's kind of in this dream world. And, yeah, it's weird how many correlations there are to the two. But, yeah.
And thanks for making that point about... Because remember, Strangelove, the origin of Strangelove was family-friendly podcast.
Yes.
But some of the movies we see, especially now that you're an adult, legally, right?
I guess I am.
We are, we see certain movies, and that's part of the analysis or recommendation we make is, would your family enjoy watching it? And this might be a case where, we might enjoy it too. I doubt it. But
no, I think if you give it a chance.
There are certain things, we wouldn't want to watch, all three of us.
A lot of people wouldn't like it, right?
No, a lot of people wouldn't. But also, Emma Stone is amazing in this. So I do understand why she's getting so much Oscar buzz. But Mark Ruffalo and Willem Dafoe, but Mark Ruffalo especially, was so funny in this. His character was like insane. It was very bold of him to take this role because it was just such an he was just such an embarrassing man. And Yorgos Lanthimos is the director. He's done quite a bit, and it's cool to see he's getting recognition now. Now we're going to talk about a movie. Oh no, I'm scared. We decided not to podcast about this because I think Dad would just be ranting too much and Maestro.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not good.
I don't know what to
Lenny.
Say. What did I say? He looks like a clown. I don't know. There's certain scenes. I mean, you see the backstage kind of stuff where they're amazing. He looks just like him. And again, that scene that took forever. I mean, that's incredible that he was the...
Right, where he's conducting orchestra.
Again, yeah. If he was known as the maestro of maestros and conductors, you know, Leonard Bernstein, you know, that it took him so long to prepare for that scene. I get it. I mean, that was very well done. He did a good job, but there's something kind of clownish about the whole situation. And the drama, I don't know, it never captured... I never could connect with anybody in that movie. And
the fight scene was good.
What's her name? Daisy. I almost called her Daisy.
Terry Mulligan.
Daisy Gatsby. That's not her name, right?
No, Daisy Mulligan.
From The Great Gatsby. She was great. She had that one scene where she was amazing. But other than that, I don't really remember much about it.
Yeah, I don't think it was. It was the story of a, I guess, in a way, the story of a great man. I mean, this great genius who made a huge impact on music and musical theater in the 20th century. But I think anybody who really knows who he is kind of knows his story, and really the music is his story.
It is. And they didn't use the music.
Yeah, and they didn't. I think Bradley Cooper, he tried. I mean, he's a good actor, but I think the character was so different from who he normally plays that he just kind of overacted. And it really didn't come across as realistic. And also, he's not at all an appealing character. I mean, you didn't really care a great deal about what happened to him.
And I think one of the big problems of this movie, and I think this is the script's fault, because the movie was directed really well. It looked really good. Well, maybe it wasn't directed. I don't know. The movie looked great.
But the black and white
was boring.
Kind of made it, well, it
and
made
pretentious.
It pretentious,
and
yes.
That was actually something I was going to say. Yesterday, y'all were asking me kind of about Saltburn and why I didn't like it and whatever. And it's kind of the same thing as that, like Bradley Cooper's making it black and white in the beginning because this is an important movie that is Hollywood, like capital H Hollywood. And that's kind of how Saltburn was, doing the 3-4 aspect ratio. Like, you're watching it and people who don't know much about movies are like, whoa, this must be a good one. If it's in this, it looks like a square instead of a rectangle. But the script was flawed because it tried to make it seem like our lead character was actually Felicia, Leonard Bernstein's wife, even though we didn't know anything about her and we didn't care about her at all. But she got all these scenes and the character development was bad. So it should have just focused on Leonard Bernstein because it was his story. So yeah, it was just all over the place.
Yeah, having said all that about the movie, I admire Bradley Cooper for doing what he's doing, because I think I've mentioned him before on another podcast that he played American Sniper. He's been in the Hangover films, the comedy, you know.
Star is Born.
And he's done a lot of different things, so more power to him.
I know, that's the thing. He does have more range, I think, than a lot of our
And
actors.
He's someone who just loves movies. There are a lot of videos of him in the actor's studio asking questions, like before he got famous.
Yeah, with Sean Penn.
Yeah. He's asking questions, like really detailed and thorough questions. So like, he clearly has a love for film, and I'm sure his next movie will be great. I hope it will be. But this one just isn't. Okay, we're almost done. Past Lives is one that I've seen, y'all haven't. I think you would really like this movie. It's kind of a what could have been, but also it's okay that it didn't happen, but also just kind of coming to terms with the immigrant story and your love life and your just life in general. It's really cool. It's a
because
small
it's,
film.
Is it set in Korea or in the
No,
United
it's
States?
Set in the United States, in New York. And it's kind of based on Celine Song, the director, which this is her first film too. Yeah, it premiered at Sundance 2023. But yeah, it's kind of her story. Really well done. Really detailed script. Really sweet. I definitely cried. And finally, we have The Zone of Interest, which we talked about very thoroughly recently on a podcast. Tough movie to get through. Beautiful film. Very important.
Yes, another one that I vaguely was aware of what it was about, but until you see it, I mean, it was like a work of art, really. I mean, that sounds so pretentious, I know, but it really was, because it had colors, it had sound, it had...
Most movies do. But I know what you mean.
Colors and sound, and sometimes it didn't have any sound. It's like that scene in that movie, right? Sometimes we talk, sometimes we don't talk.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That kind of thing. But it was very, very compelling.
And I think it really, to tell such a familiar story having to do with the Holocaust, it still found an angle that had not been told and kind of helped you maybe try to get into the minds of the people who were doing these evil things and yet living a normal life. And yeah, you just wonder how people do that. And I think you kind of got a glimpse of that. Also, I this is another of those films that I wouldn't recommend to everybody. Yeah. I really think that you have to be in the mood and you have to know ahead of time that this is an, quote, artsy film.
Slow.
And I'm sure some people would consider it pretentious, but I don't think it was, because I think there was real purpose behind the parts of the film that were different. And I think it really, those special moments helped make it, helped elevate it.
Yeah, and somehow by not showing the violence, the guns, the torture, the killings, made it worse somehow. You know, it's like, in other words, they're just going on about their lives. Nothing is different. And that's
how a lot of people lived through that.
Yeah. This is not going to do well on streaming. I can tell you that right now. People will turn it on. The first 3 minutes of just droning sounds or whatever, people will not be fans. But it really is an important and good film. And there's actually a lot of talk that this could be a surprise Oscar Best Picture winner. I don't know about that, just because Oppenheimer has so much pull, but people are just, or not yeah, people, recently got Academy a, members yeah. and critics are just loving
yeah,
this
didn't
movie.
The National Film Critics name it the best movie?
I think
or
so, yeah.
Did. And I think it's because Oppenheimer and Killers of the Flower Moon would cancel each other out or something? Or
yeah, it would be something, well, not Killers of the Flower Moon, but kind of, I don't know exactly how it would work, but you guys, Strangelove community, should look into how Best Picture is decided, because the voting system is all over the place. It's kind of very confusing. It's not what you would expect. But yeah, it was something like that. I don't
Everybody
know.
Votes on Best Picture, right?
Yes. And you rank your 10 you rank the 10 movies, and then it's just, I don't know. Look it up. There's some videos that will explain it better. But we will see. Instead of doing ratings, because we've talked about 10 movies, how about we talk about which we think will win Best Picture? The big
Should
boy.
I go first?
Sure.
I think Oppenheimer will, just because that seems to be the consensus among the observers. And I think it deserves it. I mean, I would be happy to see Christopher Nolan win.
Me too. I think he'll win for director, which will be amazing. But Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest could come out of nowhere. But I think Christopher Nolan should win.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind if Jonathan Glazer won for Best Director and then Oppenheimer won for film.
True.
But because as much as I like Zone of Interest, I don't know that it really deserves Best Picture, because I think a lot of people wouldn't enjoy it. So I kind of have mixed feelings about whether Best Picture should be really the most innovative, best made film, which in some ways might be Zone of Interest, or if it should be the film that gives the most sort of enjoyment and enrichment to people. And Oppenheimer, I think, fits that category.
Yeah, and it's such
a good
feat.
That's a good way of putting that, because Zone of Interest captures the day-to-day minutiae of life, a particular kind of life at a particular kind of time. But yeah, Oppenheimer all the way. I think it's a serious film, and it had the credibility, the big stars, and the big director, and the big everything about it, and I think it's going to be the best picture.
I'm hoping Oppenheimer wins, but I'm going to say Zone of Interest just so that I can be excited if I am right. But no, I would be very, very happy if Oppenheimer won.
And in any other year, I think Killers of the Flower Moon would also
deserve it.
But again, Oppenheimer is from a great director, and it really has something to say and has done very well.
Yes.
And I think it's his time.
I agree. I think I really want him to win at least one of the big two, because he deserves it. He's brought so much joy to so many people and made people think. His movies make people think.
Yes.
Well, there you have it, right? An A to Z. I see where you were going. Anatomy of a Fall to Zone of Interest.
Yes.
A to Z, get it?
Yes. We got a little messed up.
We didn't do that, did we?
It's all right, though. Follow us on Instagram at StrangeLoveOfMedia. Visit our website, StrangeLoveOfMovies.com, where we will do an Oscars recap. Thank you so much for listening and supporting us throughout this year. It's been kind of chaotic, but we love movies. It's been a really, really, really good year for movies. And we'll talk to you soon, post-Oscars. Probably post-Oppenheimer Best Picture win. Bye!